Chapter 15. The Kupo system was beautiful, in that it was free of any Imperial fleet ships. "This is good. We're going to have to land and make repairs," I said. "The Jewel couldn't outrun a Bantha right now."
"Do you have some place in particular in mind?"
Nakari asked. "I will in a minute. Remember that list of Kupoans that Saket gave us back on Dinan? She probably didn't expect us to wind up on her home planet, but maybe there's a name there we can contact."
"Oh, right. The file was supposed to decrypt using Rancor sauce. Hang on."
She left the cockpit to retrieve her datapad, and I set a course for a smaller city on the opposite side of the globe from the capital. I'd adjust as necessary. And thanks to the peculiarities of the planet, I was looking forward to the challenges of any adjustments. Kupo had achieved a somewhat legendary status among pilots. It was supposed to be constantly buffeted by howling winds, seriously loud, dangerous winds, not gentle breezes, that not only made piloting difficult, but also interfered with hearing. So much white noise whipped around on the surface that most off-world beings had to communicate via helmet intercom. Either that or shout. Or use sign language. The Kupoans had evolved their frequency filter organs to screen out all the noise and detect voices. And of course it helped them hunt as well. There was an entire ecosystem of creatures that lived in the wind. Animals that rarely, if ever, landed, spending their entire existence in the air. Pilots that had to go in with their shields up or risk taking damage for the larger beasts, and then hope the winds didn't toss them into the ground like poorly flown kites. Out of necessity, the Kupoans had built tall baffles to help pilots land on the surface rather than crash. They had dozens of recommended atmospheric entry points where the wind patterns were merely annoying rather than terrifying, and you had to ride them out until you could drop down behind a mountain range or one of their baffles and settle down. Even then, you'd have to worry about rogue gusts and eddies. But they had the approach routes to most places worked out to at least a modicum of safety. Nakari returned, datapad in hand.
"There's a contact here listed in the city of Tonek, on the eastern continent. Name is Azur Nessim. Hold on a second. Let me see if we can bring up some more information."
Switching from her datapad to the ship's computer, which could access Kupo's infonet, maintained by satellites and orbital platforms, she typed in a query and growled at a mistake that forced her to delete it and redo, punching the keys and showing that word who was boss. There was a lag in processing due to the distances involved, but the net worked well, and an information dump appeared soon enough. Nakari summarized.
"Azur Nessim is founder and head of Nessim Courier and Cargo. He has facilities scattered about the planet, but its headquarters matches the location that Saket provided in her files."
"All right, we'll head there. Good business to be in for a spy, eh?"
"Yeah, gives him a legitimate reason to go anywhere."
"And if he has his own fleet, that means he could have his own repair facility." I changed course in accordance with the recommended atmospheric entry point for Tonek, and asked R2 to attempt to reach Nessim via comm using the number Saket had provided. Meanwhile, several different ships in orbit and entities on the ground were trying to reach us, all of them asking for our names and business.
"Inquisitive lot, aren't they?"
Nakari remarked after the third time she told someone we were tourists here to enjoy Kupo's windsurfing. Though the Empire strictly controlled the interstellar holonet, the Kupoans had a local system infonet set up almost of necessity to exchange weather information and help ships land safely. We received a call from Azur Nessim within minutes of R2's comm request. He popped up on our holodisplay, a stocky individual wearing a vest, his arms folded across his chest. At some point, he'd lost a bite-sized chunk of his left basal ear and had never had it surgically improved. The fur hanging down underneath his jaw was long, braided, and beaded, which struck me as unusual for a Kupoan, because it would make distracting noises when he moved. I didn't know if it meant he belonged to a secret society, or if it was a fashion he had chosen to offend society as a whole.
Yes, what news?
He asked. Hello, Azur, I replied, perhaps taking liberties by using his first name when we were strangers, but strangers were almost certainly listening in, so we couldn't tell him we were Alliance operatives desperate for help. We just came from Deenan and tried Socket's noodles, like you suggested, but you didn't tell me how good her Nerf nuggets were. I'd say they were the best in the galaxy. Azur Nessun cocked his head to the side. The movement made his mutilated ear more noticeable, and I wondered if he did that on purpose.
Nerf nuggets, eh? I don't suppose you brought me any.
Saket hadn't told us how to respond to additional questions. If it was a test or a code of some kind, I didn't know the answer. Maybe it was a roundabout way of asking if our mission had been successful. Deciding to go with that, I said, Of course. Saket made a batch especially for you. The Kapoan righted his head and showed his teeth in a broad grin. The movement made the braids of his beard sway like vines in a gentle breeze.
Cannot wait. My place of residence has changed since we saw each other last. New coordinates at the end of transmission. See you soon.
His image winked out, replaced by a series of numbers that I asked R2 to input and execute into the autopilot. They were only slightly different from the course I had already set. Oh, and R2, since we're going to be limping in there with only one engine, can you give me an estimate of our arrival time? Drusel Beforen replied instantly over the intercom.
3 hours and 43 minutes, 12 seconds. Give or take a few minutes, depending on the point that you take manual control and other variables.
Thanks, Drusel, I said, then added, We're going to try to resupply while we're here. Is there anything you want or need to add to the list?
My basic needs are being met. I would not want to request anything else that might delay our eventual departure. My primary desire is to be reunited with my family.
Okay, we'll do our best. Almost 4 hours to planetfall would give the Empire time to catch up to us if they knew where to look. It would also give all the spies in the system a nice long look at us. And maybe they'd pause to wonder why we were currently diving toward the planet more like a dead bird than the rich windsurfing tourists in a custom yacht we were pretending to be. I'll tell you what I want, I said to Nakari.
You mean besides another engine?
Yeah, besides that. Before the Empire interrupted, I was back in the galley trying to make calf. I could really use it now. Her eyes flicked down to my tunic.
That first cup looks great on you, Luke. That's some serious forward-thinking fashion you're wearing.
Oh, come on.
Not everyone can make their spills look like art. Did you use the Force to get that pattern right there?
Guess I'll go change while I'm at it. As I stood, Nakari dropped her teasing manner and said,
Luke, we used up almost all our money getting those upgrades.
Good thing, too. They did the job for us.
I know, but how are we going to pay for a new sublight engine? We have some credits to take care of food and such, but not nearly enough to finance these repairs. I can't imagine the Alliance is suddenly flush now, even if we could get hold of Admiral Akbar from here.
Maybe we could trade a future favor, or do a job of some kind for this Azur Nessun. Not all transactions need to be in cash.
I don't know. He looked like he was a cash-money kind of operator.
What makes you say that? The beads in his beard?
I thought they might be a clue, yeah. I know you can't see colors well on my cheap hollow projector, but they seem to me like they might be gold.
I bet they clack together when he's chewing food. Probably makes all kinds of racket. She gave a short courtesy laugh, and then said,
Be serious.
All right, I said, leaning against the cockpit hatch and folding my arms in a futile attempt to cover my stained tunic. Nakari turned her chair to look at me as I spoke. I think we're in trouble. We can't trust this Azur Nessun not to sell us out the moment someone from the Empire offers to buy him some more beard beads. And it's not just him we can't trust. It's this whole system. Information is currency. And right now, the Empire is offering plenty of credits for information on our whereabouts. You can bet all those people asking us questions have noted that we have 3 life forms aboard, and that labels us as an interesting contact already. They'll pry closer for sure. And we can't be 100% sure whose side anybody's on, regardless of what they say. Here I jerked a thumb at the living quarters and rolled my eyes to indicate Drusel, who could still hear me through the open intercom. But we have no choice but to attempt to complete the mission. Can't go back to the fleet until we do.
Do you have any ideas about how to convince him to help us?
I'm hoping to come up with something before then. I couldn't think of anything, though. I knew plenty of Alliance secrets, but those weren't for sale. The Desert Jewel herself might make us a fair bit of money, enough to trade for another ship, but I couldn't imagine breaking even on any kind of deal like that, much less coming out ahead. We'd never get a ship that could manage the same speed, and I wouldn't dream of suggesting it out loud to Nakari. After I'd cleaned up and changed, I visited Drusel and R2 in the living quarters. The Given was sitting up straight in a meditative position on the top bunk, her long tunic flowing down from her shoulders like draperies. Her datapad lay on top of her crossed legs, but she wasn't using it when I entered. She was staring at the ceiling for some reason. Or maybe her eyes were closed. I don't know. Her chin was tilted up, and I got the idea that she was praying or meditating rather than searching for defects in the ship's construction. Drusel, mind if I speak with you? Her head dropped and turned, and those black eye sockets regarded me with an unreadable expression. If it's convenient, I amended. I hope I'm not interrupting.
You are no bother. After our earlier conversation regarding the Force, I have been entertaining myself with cascading probability letters. I can always return to them later.
Great, I said, having no idea what she meant. I edged into the room and passed R2, patting him on the dome and telling him that I appreciated his work before taking a seat on the lower bunk opposite Drusel. I explained that we needed a new engine and fuel at minimum to leave the planet once we landed on it, and whoever sold them to us would need money or valuable information in exchange for that. Drusel volunteered to share what little she knew of Imperial operations in the sectors surrounding Hutspace, and I said we'd certainly make the offer, but the Kupoans probably knew much of that already and wouldn't place much value on it.
I could perhaps avail myself of some information in this system,
the Given mused, gesturing at her custom-built hardware.
If our host wishes to raid a particular data cache and rifle through its contents in exchange for an engine, I am confident that I can slice our way to an accommodation.
You'd be willing to do that?
Of course.
For once, her voice rang clearly, free of the thickness it usually contained.
I will do whatever needs to be done.
I believed her, and felt unnerved, for it had occurred to me that she might have made the same promise to someone else, someone in the Empire. Her long tenure under the protection of the Imperial Security Bureau could very well mean she was working for them even now. Leia and Admiral Ackbar hadn't shared with me any details on Drusel's background. How did they know she was legitimately an enemy of the New Order? The ISB could be using her to infiltrate the Alliance. Our escape from Dalang had me suspicious as well. How hard had the Empire really been trying? They had certainly seemed intent on killing us at the time, but strategically that cruiser shouldn't have been there by itself. The Empire knew of the Interdictor's vulnerabilities, or else they wouldn't habitually surround them with escorts. So why send one in alone this time to pull everything out of hyperspace in the hope of catching us? They might have caught something a whole lot meaner than a single fugitive ship. It reeked of desperation. Or a sacrifice. But a sacrifice to what end? Would the Emperor sacrifice an entire cruiser and all its crew to bolster the credibility of one operative? I didn't know if he was heartless enough to throw away lives like that. Vader probably was, but we hadn't had a whiff of his involvement yet. I shook my head to clear it. Maybe it was all an elaborate plot, and someone had planned their hollow chess moves far ahead of time. But if so, I couldn't see the shape of their attack yet. It was far more likely that the Empire never thought a single ship would have the ordnance or guts to successfully attack an Interdictor solo. And that was it. Then again, Drusil could be playing both sides for some other agenda of her own. She was certainly intelligent enough to do so. Regardless of the true situation, our best bet was to get the jewel refitted and out of the system as fast as possible. And a tiny twinge of paranoia probably wouldn't go amiss here. The Kupoans weren't quite as renowned for spying as the Bothans were, but for my money, they were a close second. Or in a way, even better, precisely because they weren't renowned for something that should be conducted secretly. Their extraordinary hearing made them excellent eavesdroppers, able to catch snippets of whispered conversation across a busy cantina by using their sonic filters to isolate the voices they wanted. Rumor had it the Kupoans, who had trained in law enforcement, could isolate your heartbeat and detect stressors in your voice that betrayed when you were lying. And because it was almost impossible to sneak up on them, they made a game of it. Becoming naturally stealthy as they grew up, they would make excellent assassins. Maybe they were so good no one ever caught them at it. But in any case, we would have to assume that anything we said on the planet could be overheard. I reminded Drusil of that because we could easily reveal in an unguarded moment who we were and what we were doing. And that would be valuable information to sell. I told R2 to stick close to me while we were on the surface. Don't ever be alone. Someone could try to mess with you to get at your memory. The droid rocked back and forth on his support arms and chirped and whistled in outrage at the very idea. Thanks for your time, Drusil. I'll let you get back to your probable ladders or... The Gibbon nodded once in reply and tilted her chin at the ceiling before I left the quarters. But her voice called me back. Yes?
One of the probabilities may interest you. It is almost certain that this ship's system has been remotely sliced since we arrived in this sector.
What? How? R2 added several indignant beeps to that. Don't you think my droid would have noticed?
I imagine he will find something if he looks now.
R2's socket jack whirred in the computer, and his dome light began to wink as he worked. Drusil continued.
It will not be an invasive burst of code. It will behave more like a Minarch, attaching itself inconspicuously and going along for the ride. But it will see what you see, know where you go and who you talk to. Were we tourists, this would be of little consequence and the information unworthy of trade. However, we are not tourists, are we?
No, we're definitely not. R2 spat out a long, warbling stream of annoyed chirps, and the top of his dome rotated in extreme agitation. I'd have to go back to the cockpit to get a translation of the noise. Nakari was already reading it, and her loud reaction sounded unhappy. I'll be right back, I said. Nakari scowled as I ducked my head into the cockpit.
Luke, who could be slicing into the jewel?
Hold on, let me see what R2 said. The message read,
Malicious code found and neutralized. Surveillance program, origin unknown. Inserted recently.
It would have been almost as soon as we entered the system and accessed their net, she said. When I did that search for Azunessin, I can't believe we'd get tagged so fast or so easily.
Well, we already know that some of them do contract work for the spy net. This is probably their way of saying hello.
It's rude.
To them, it's business as usual. They probably figure if we can't protect ourselves, then we deserve to be spied on.
I obviously need to upgrade my firewalls. Lots more fire, I think, she said. Could it have been Nessun himself who did it? Or one of his employees?
Sure, I shrugged. It could have been almost anyone in the system, though. I jerked my head to indicate the living quarters. I need to get back. Keep an eye on the scanners and yell if anything develops.
Yeah, all right.
I was trying not to fall into the trap of conspiracy theories. Once you start looking for them, you see them everywhere. But they're usually just mirages, nothing more. And yet this was quite a coincidence. I returned to the quarters, thrust my hands in my pockets, and looked up at the Given. You know, Drusel, I think we should talk.
You say that as if we had not been talking in the very recent past, or as if we are not, in fact, already talking.
Sorry, that was sort of a human idiom. I said that to suggest we should talk about matters underneath the surface.
The surface of what? Oh!
She nodded to herself.
I understand. We have arrived at the time when you search for the politest possible way to accuse me of being an Imperial spy.
How did you... Do you have equations that predict human behavior?
I would be the Emperor if I did. But there is no need. Human faces are expressive, and yours is not a difficult one to interpret. And I can hardly fault you for being suspicious. You do not know me well, or any Given, I would wager. And I was most recently in the employ of the Empire for an extended period, however unwilling. A certain amount of suspicion is warranted. I take no offense.
Well, I suppose that's good. I'm glad you're not offended and that you're willing to discuss it so frankly. But I'm not reassured. The invasive code you predicted would be there, and was there, could have been placed in the ship's system by you far more easily than by someone else in the system who barely had time to realize we were here.
You are assuming that someone is manually inserting the code rather than the code existing on the net and executing on an automatic trigger. But as you are speaking of mere possibilities rather than likelihoods, you are correct, Luke Skywalker. I also could have taken over the entire ship whenever I wished, for your security is laughably easy to circumvent. Do you see the flaw in your reasoning? If I had wanted to ensure that we were captured by the Empire, why did I not move more slowly in the sewers on Dedan? Or shut down the ship in the Nanthri system so that we would be captured by pirates? Or disable us in Dalang, and then simply wait for the Empire to pick us up?
I never said you wished us to be captured by the Empire.
Ah! So you believe I have some other goal in mind. What might that be?
The theory I favor at the moment is that you want to learn the location of the Rebel fleet. That's the only intelligence goal that would justify an elaborate plot like this. By tracking our communications, you hope to find out something useful. You're waiting for us to contact Alliance personnel. Drusel Beforan nodded.
I see. Your reasoning is sound. The Empire would indeed do almost anything to discover where the Rebels are hiding. And if I already know the location of the Rebel fleet, would that allay your suspicions about my loyalties?
My guts turned cold. Are you posing a hypothetical question about my reaction? Or are you saying you actually know the location?
I do not know its precise location. But I can make an educated guess based on my insider's knowledge of current Imperial fleet deployments, then subtracting the majority of occupied worlds and continuing to eliminate other such variables until we arrive at a manageable number. The Rebel fleet is in the Outer Rim.
A relieved chuckle escaped my throat. She didn't know anything dangerous. Of course it is. Everyone knows that. All those unoccupied systems to hide in makes it obvious.
But a large number of unoccupied systems can be eliminated through modal reasoning matrices. logistics loop theory and the high probability that the Alliance would use only known hyperspace routes.
You lost me in the middle there.
Then I shan't dwell on the methodology. But had I wished the Rebel fleet discovered, I would have already told the Empire to search the Zaja, Kowak, or Pentura systems. My analysis points to one of them.
The cold feeling returned. If she had told the Empire that, they would have indeed found the Alliance around Orto Plutonia and the Pentura system. I didn't bother to dispute her analysis. I have no talent for lying. My best option was to keep silent and confirm nothing.
Your silence is telling, Luke Skywalker.
Are all Given capable of analyzing fleet movements the way you are? I asked. Because if so, the Empire could ask any of them for help, or coerce them, which was more likely.
Most are capable of the basic functions, but I hope you will not think it immodest if I proclaim myself to be unusually accomplished in probability theory. It has useful applications in cryptography, and I cannot imagine that anyone else would be privy to the secrets that I was during my ersatz employment with the ISB. I have knowledge of where the Empire has searched, and can guess where they will search next with a high degree of probability, since they lack imagination and distrust the power of randomization.
That would be useful information.
I will be delighted to share it with you when I am successfully reunited with my family.
You can predict Imperial fleet movements, but you're keeping it to yourself? Sharing it now could save lives.
And if I have nothing to trade, I could lose mine.
I understood her position, but it was frustrating to run up against self-interest when a team effort would serve everyone better. Still, I could press her regarding the math she had willingly taken on earlier. Did you finish your probability calculation regarding Imperial pursuit before we get to Kupo?
I did. It's possible they will appear, but unlikely. We will make it to the surface. Getting off it again without Imperial efforts to find us is much less likely.
I nodded, privately thinking that she might spur those Imperial efforts herself. We were headed to the residence of a Kupoan spy who, if he did not work with the Alliance, was at least referred to us by one that did. Pulling on the thread of Azur Nessun might unravel quite a bit for the Empire. I would have to make sure Nakari hadn't hooked her datapad into the ship's computer at all, because Drusel, or I supposed anyone else in the system if we were now exposed, would then be able to slice it and access the entire list of contacts given to us by Saket. As if she could read me again, Drusel said,
"If I may make a general observation, the problem with conspiracy theories is that they have their own gravity. They are black holes from which one rarely escapes. Caution is advisable at all times, of course, but recognize that sometimes the beings you meet truly are good."
"Noted," I said, and I made an effort to smile. "And I agree. Think of me as cautious."
"I do. And approve."
Nodding once and excusing myself after asking R2 to continually monitor all systems for data invasions, I returned to the cockpit and caught Nakari up, advising her to keep her datapad isolated and in her possession until we no longer needed that list of contacts. Drusel's calculations proved accurate again, as we were able to bite into atmosphere and land on Kupo without active pursuit by anything except the wind. The mild winds of the entry point gave us the most harrowing ride I've ever experienced, though, and I was grateful that the Desert Jewel was all one piece, and we didn't have to worry about wings shearing off. The descent was a bone-shaking ride, even with the benefit of acceleration compensators, and it was still rough going after we dropped behind the first baffle. The chop of the air didn't reduce significantly until after we dipped over a second and third baffle, and then we were guided via Tonex traffic control through a sort of slalom of towering stone wind traps, which not only served our purposes, but also provided some shelter to the pale, grassy flatlands below, dotted with herds of Pazic. Using the Jewel's upmarket scanners, I took a close-up hollow of the Pazic because I'd never seen one before. They were broader and shorter than Nerfs, coated with a dense mat of black fur, and their horns were strangely aligned on the tops of their heads, as if someone had rested a giant scroll on top of them, facing forward. These were supposed to be hollow, allowing the wind to pass through, and by angling their heads into the wind or placing their backs to it, they created various sounds to call to others at much greater volume than they could manage with their vocal cords. Since most of the planet was an unbroken wind-swept plain, the Pazic had plenty of room to roam and multiply, and the Kapoans seemed happy to let them breed, since they were supposed to be delicious. The wind traps did their job, improving conditions until we had smooth air on our final approach to Tonek, which, like all the Kapoan cities, was nestled inside a protected mountain valley. To reach it, we had to fly through a tunnel bored into the great range of the eastern continent, and when we emerged, we saw the Kapoan city stretched before us, resting in between the peaks as if the buildings had tumbled there after a landslide. Nessun Courier and Cargo sprawled along one side of Tonek's busy spaceport, boasting rows of warehouses, hangars, and freighter ports. Our contact had done very well for himself, and we soon discovered that he was not the sort to lounge in an office and take long lunches that consisted mostly of alcohol. Like Fayette Kellen, he took an active role in the daily business of his company. Uniformed crew and flashing glow panel lights guided us into a vacant space in a large hangar. When we disembarked, the air possessed a mysterious animal tang, like wet dog or feathers on fire. I wasn't sure if it was Kupo's natural odor, or specific to this area, or if it was borne here by the wind. Even in the sheltered confines of the city, the wind whistled and moaned and ruffled our hair, though I suspected the moaning was caused by the passage of air through Pazic horns. There was a light freighter under repair in the berth next to ours, and I noticed that the crew was not entirely Kapoan, but of mixed species. One of them was a Wookiee, which made me miss Chewbacca. Azur Nessun was waiting for us at the bottom of the Jewel's loading ramp, dressed in the same gray and green uniform as all the other workers. That's not to say he displayed no hint of his elevated status. In addition to the earrings on his basal ears, his beard beads turned out to be gold, as we'd suspected, and his braided strands swung and clacked together like an abacus when he spoke. It was a mesmerizing display, and I gradually became aware that it was purposeful. One became so absorbed in his animated chin fur that his other movements went largely unnoticed, such as the discreet tapping of his finger against a miniature data pad strapped to the inside of his left arm, or the way his gaze would lose focus briefly as his attention fixed on something scrolling past a display lens he had suspended over two of his four eyes. He hadn't been wearing that when we spoke by a hollow, but now he was obviously dividing his attention.
"Welcome to Kupo, friends. If you are fond of Saket's noodles, you might also enjoy something I can provide for you. How may I please you today?"
He wasn't running any kind of restaurant here, so his phrasing was peculiar. I wondered when or even if we would begin to speak plainly about who we were and how we had come to be there. Were we being observed by unfriendly eyes even now? I decided we didn't have time for roundabout speech, and baldly stated what we had come for. "We need to refuel, rearm with 6 concussion missiles, and we also need to either repair or replace one of our sublight engines, depending on the damage."
"The first 2 items should be no trouble," he said,
already moving to the back of the ship and speaking as he walked and typed.
"But engine damage may require some time to remedy. Days, or even weeks, depending on specifics. And, of course, significant resources. Let us see what needs to be done."
He he made a whistling noise that secured the attention of a uniformed mechanic who detached himself from the light freighter detail and came over to examine our ship. He was also Capoan, but he only had two neck torques, a single earring on his basal ear, and an entirely ordinary beard. Azure introduced him as Ra'uf Wala'uk. He greeted us amiably, but it quickly became clear that Ra'uf's expertise would not be needed. The engine was a total loss, half melted to slag by that last TIE fighter that had chased us out of Dalang.
"Inconvenient,"
was the sum of Azure's commentary on the subject.
"What kind of engine is it?"
Nakari told him, and he tapped out a search on his datapad and waited for results. All four eyes blinked when the information came in.
"That is, or was, an outstanding engine. Unfortunately, there aren't any of those available on the planet."
He shook his head and set his beads knocking together.
"It is the curse of beautiful custom ships, yes? They are superior to all other ships, until it comes time to repair one. We could order that engine off-world, but I am unsure if you have the luxury of time to wait for it."
"We don't," Nakari confirmed.
"Then we must choose an available substitute. Your ship will not be as fast, of course, and you will lose efficiency as your system compensates for thrust differentials."
"It'll still be faster than flying on a single engine," Nakari said. "Tell me about our options."
"Certainly, if you will follow me. I have a holo table where I can display specs for you."
He led us past the light freighter to a suite of administrative offices. I noticed that the hangar was equipped with several offices on one side. On the other, near the jewel, was a kitchen and dining area for the crew's break time, along with restrooms and lockers. As soon as the door closed behind us, Azur Nessun's facade of polite professionalism sloughed off to reveal a snarling Capoan. He rounded on us and curled his hands into fists at his sides.
"I don't know who you are, but you had better not be bringing the Empire behind you. Tell me true, do I have to worry about stormtroopers coming in here and burning down my life around me?"
"Maybe," Nakari replied. "But how is that different from any other day in the galaxy? The Empire will be there until we destroy it."
"I know they could come for me any time,"
Azur growled.
"My rebel spies are more likely to bring them sooner rather than later. That engine didn't melt down spontaneously. And I'm assuming you launched your 6 concussion missiles at someone."
Nakari matched his tone.
"Hey, we don't want to be here either. If we had a choice, we wouldn't be. But Sarket gave us your name in case we needed it, and she said you'd help us. So will you help us, or was her faith in you misplaced?"
Azur snorted in derision.
"She doesn't have faith in me. She knows I hate the Empire, and that is all."
"So we shouldn't put our faith in you?"
"Definitely not. But I do hate the Empire. And I like money. You can trust in that. Can I trust that you have money?"
"No."
The Capoan said nothing for a few seconds, tension building as his face twitched, his ears flattened, and he stared at Nakari in disbelief. Finally, he exploded.
"Then why are you here? You expect me to furnish an engine for free?"
"We have information. The lucrative kind."
Azur visibly calmed, his primary ears returning to their customary position.
"Oh, then that's different. You could have said so before I lost my temper. What is the nature of this information?"
Drusel offered up her knowledge of Imperial maneuvers outside of Hutt space first. And when Azur inquired as to how she came to possess this intelligence, the answer renewed his agitation.
"You're the ones, aren't you? The ones they have a bounty on. Half the galaxy is looking for you, and you fly to my hangar?"
"The information's good, though."
It's the worst kind!
He pointed a rude, thick finger at Drusel.
If I sell anything that this particular given woman knows, then the Empire will come ask me where I got it. I can't risk it. I'm sorry.
His finger flew across his miniature datapad keyboard.
As it is, I have to send my family away on an emergency vacation so that there's an outside chance of their survival. If I ever see Saket again, I'm going to kick her kneecaps backward. Because you'll know my whole crew out there saw you, and your ship. If any of them figured out who you are, your presence here could already be sold to the Empire.
How likely is it that mechanics are information dealers?
Drusel asked.
I don't know. I don't spy on my employees. There's no money in it.
Out of curiosity, Nakari said, how much money is in us? I mean, in giving us up. What's the bounty?
Azur had the grace to look uncomfortable speaking of us as commodities. He sniffed, shrugged, and avoided specifics.
There's a goodly sum for information leading to the capture of the Given, but a much greater one for directly delivering her to the Empire.
Really goodly, then?
Nakari asked, her tone solicitous but clearly mocking.
There is another alternative,
Drusel said.
I am an excellent slicer and cryptographer. Indeed, that is why I am so closely pursued by the Empire. Should you wish to acquire any data available here on Kupo, I am almost certain I can procure it.
Azur Nessun began to shake his head before Drusel even finished.
No, no, no! I am an honest business person.
You're also a spy, and trade in secrets all the time, Nakari pointed out.
I trail in secrets, yes. There is a certain commerce there, a mutual consent to the exchange. I do not steal secrets, nor do I extort them, or do anything but provide value for value, lest I dishonor my family and lose one or more of these.
A finger drifted up to point at his status earrings.
So while I thank you for the offer, I must decline. What else do you have that might offset the expense of an engine?
Silence stretched and took up all the space in the room, and Nessun waited. His beard beads remained perfectly still, gleaming and predatory like a cat before it pounces.
Have you heard of Kellen Biolabs based on Pasha?
Nakari asked, her voice pitched low and dull with defeat.
Yes, of course. A vastly profitable enterprise.
I am Nakari Kellen, daughter of Fayette Kellen. I can provide you with first-hand knowledge of what my father called the most significant biological find in decades, and furnish coordinates to find the source.
Nakari, what are you doing? I said.
Getting us an engine, she replied.
Azur Nessun narrowed his eyes, flattened his ears against his skull, and reared back.
What is this? You expect me to believe the heir to Kellen Biolabs conducts espionage operations for the Alliance?
I expect you can independently verify my identity with that datapad strapped to your arm. And rumor has it, the Kupoans can hear the ring of truth in human voices anyway. The question is whether such information will earn us what we need.
I imagine so. If it is truly the best discovery in decades.
My father knows his business, and likes money just as much as you do, sir. When he says the development potential is vast, you may rely upon it.
You say you have first-hand knowledge of this discovery? A planet?
A moon. And yes, we've been there. So far, fewer than 10 beings have set foot on the surface, almost all of them in the employ of my father.
Azur Nessun turned his gaze to me.
And who are you, exactly?
He's my pilot,
Nakari said, before I could answer.
It was the truth, if not all of it. And Nessun responded by turning his gaze back to Nakari, his ears twitching in agitation. Deciding to drop the question of my identity, for which I was relieved, since I doubted that my name would ease his worries, Nessun pursued a different line of questioning.
Why would you sell this information and betray your father?
I thought that was an excellent question. I wanted to hear the answer to that myself.
It's not a betrayal. He gave me full permission to deal his business a setback in an emergency, and since we can't expect to complete our mission without an engine, I believe this qualifies. And it's not like he owns that moon or exclusive rights to exploit it. It was inevitable that other people would find out about it eventually. It might as well be now, when we can profit by it.
She hooked a thumb back at Drusel, adding,
And when the Empire can lose a valuable resource in the process. My father hates the Empire too, you know. He'd gladly give up all the profits of this moon if it means a victory for the Alliance, and my survival.
She tacked on a wry smile at the end of this. Azur Nessun's ears continued to twitch for a few seconds, and I saw some movement of the gilled fins inside his frequency filters. He was probably listening for irregular heartbeats or stressed breathing, indicators of dishonesty. And finally, he nodded once, curtly, which set his beads clapping together as if in approval of a bargain made.
Very well. Provide me the details. I will sell the information immediately and order you an engine of your choosing, together with the concussion missiles and the fuel you need.
Nakari pushed back a little.
We will keep the coordinates in reserve until you have a buyer.
Nessun had no problem with that.
Of course.
Begging your pardons,
Drusel said.
But assuming a buyer is found quickly, how long will it be until the engine can be installed? I wish to know the earliest possible time we may resume our journey.
It will be a few days, even if I order one this instant,
Nessun replied.
But it could conceivably be weeks. It all depends on how fast I can find the buyer.
The given shoulders visibly slumped.
I see. Thank you for your candor.
I assure you I'll move as quickly as I can. In the meantime,
the Kupoan said,
I will find you some discreet lodging, and I think it might be a good time to begin spying on my employees.
I thought you said there's no money in it, I said.
There isn't. I want to make sure there's no Empire in it either, until you're gone.
I might be able to render assistance in that regard,
Drusel said, pulling her custom hardware out of her carry sack.
If you provide me the names of your crew, I will effectively block the access to the Empire until we leave.
How? You're just going to cut them off from the net?
No, nothing so crude. I will reroute all their messages to a temporary account, where we may screen it first before allowing it to pass on.
What about holocalls?
A mysterious outage in service will plague them for a brief time.
Nessun flicked his gaze to Nakari.
Can she really do that?
Nakari shrugged.
Think of the goodly sum the Empire is offering to recapture her, and you tell me.
Very well,
he said.
I suppose I can trust you in this, since your self-interests and mine coincide.
Once he gave Drusel the names and received assurance that he would get regular reports from her, he clapped his hands together and sank into a plush office chair behind his hardwood desk.
No,
he almost purred, gesturing to some other less comfortable chairs across from him that we had ignored until now.
Please, be seated, and tell me more about this fascinating moon.